but seeing her again was like a lightning bolt hitting my heart. She was wearing a dark-coloured dress, burgundy or maybe blue, it was hard to tell, and her hair was shorter. But her eyes were the same as they always were. I opened my mouth to speak, but the words wouldn't come. Instead, I gaped pathetically like a drowning fish. "You shouldn't have come here," Seffi whispered, her gaze never moving from my face. "It isn't safe." I had to. Was that really my voice, so hoarse and strange? I had to. I tried again. "Is it true?" "Yes." We watched each other, and then she stepped forward and put her arms around my waist and rested her head on my shoulder. I immediately pulled her closer. She was having a baby. Ah, baby. I could hardly breathe for the wonder of it. I placed a finger under her chin to raise her head, and I kissed her. She hugged me tighter, returning my kiss, our tongues dancing together. And in that moment, the ice inside me shattered into a trillion pieces. We shared a world of hope and regret and pleasure and pain in that one kiss, until we were both breathless and dizzy. I moved away slightly to rest my hands on her abdomen. Her hands covered mine. Her stomach was only slightly rounded, but the moment I touched her, a frisson of electricity passed right through me, like my child inside her was trying to connect with me somehow. She was carrying our child. I looked into Seffi's face, but I could hardly see her for the tears in my eyes. "If it's a boy, I'm going to call him Ryan, after your dad. If it's a girl, call her Rose," I said, looking around. "Callie Rose." "Hell no, hell yes." We both started to laugh. It felt so strange, unusual, peculiar. One look at her face and I knew Seffi wasn't going to give in on this. "Okay. Callie Rose it is." Seffi moved to hold me once more. "I thought I'd never see you again." "Seffi, I had to ask. About that night." "Yes? Why did you cry?" Seffi stepped away from me, her gaze dropping. "Don't ask me that. Did I hurt you? If I did, I'm sorry." "Of course you didn't. You know you didn't." "Then why?" At first I thought she wasn't going to answer. But then she looked straight at me, and I held my breath as she began to speak. "When we made love, I knew I loved you. That I always have, and that I always will. But I also realized what you'd been trying to tell me all these years. You're a nought, and I'm a cross. And there's nowhere for us to be. Nowhere for us to go where we'd be left in peace. Even if we had gone away together when I wanted us to, we would have been together for a year, maybe two. But sooner or later, other people would have found a way to wedge us apart. That's why I started crying. That's why I couldn't stop. For all the things we might have had and all the things we're never going to have. I understand. And I did. I've been hurting inside over the same thing for most of my life. When you said... Seffy paused, looking embarrassed. When you said you loved me, did you mean it? I don't mind if you didn't, she rushed on. Well, I do, but I mean... I held out my hands, and she put hers in mine, looking at me ruefully. Love was like an avalanche, with Seffy and I hand in hand, racing like hell to get out of its way, only... instead of running away from it, we kept running straight towards it. Let's get out of here, I smiled. Let's go away. We can be together. Even if it's just for a little while. We could try... Light after light after light clicked on around us, dazzling and blinding. Callum, run! Run! I put one hand up to my eyes, but I couldn't see. And then something hit my head, and I was knocked to the ground, and all the lights in the world went out.
Chapter 113. I thought one of the kidnappers might try again, or maybe try to get to you so that you wouldn't be able to identify them. So, I had extra security installed throughout the premises when you were in hospital. You've got the wrong man! I screamed at him again. Why won't you listen to me? Callum hasn't done anything wrong! No one was listening to me. I screamed at the police to let him go as they carried Callum away, but they'd ignored me. I tried to hold on to Callum, to pull him back, but Dad had dragged me inside the house with an angry demand that I stop making such a spectacle of myself. Callum hasn't done anything. We were just talking. I lowered my voice. Maybe if I stopped shouting, he'd listen to me. You're lying, Dad replied at once. I know for a fact that Callum McGregor was one of your kidnappers. But you should also know for a fact that he saved my life. When I escaped from my prison cell into the woods, Callum found me. He could have told the others where I was, but he didn't. No, he just raped you and made you pregnant instead. Dad said bitterly, Kamal, please, Mother began. Callum didn't rape me. He didn't. But you're pregnant, so he must have done, Mother frowned. I'm pregnant because we made love to each other, I shouted angrily. And it was the most magical, wonderful night of my life. My only regret is Callum and I can't do it again. Dad slapped me so hard he knocked me off my feet. Mother tried to rush to my side, but Dad pulled her back. He drew himself up to his full height, looking down on me with an expression on his face I'd never seen before. You are no longer my daughter. You are a blanker's slut, Dad said with quiet venom. But I'll tell you this. You will go to the clinic, and you will have an abortion. I will not allow you to embarrass me any further. Do you hear me? Do you hear me? I hear you. I rubbed my cheek, ignoring the tears streaming down my face. Dad turned and marched out of the room. Mother looked down at me, anguish filling every curve and line of her face. Oh, Seffy. Seffy, she whispered, and then she turned around and left me. Alone. That's what I was now. That's all I was now, according to my dad. A blanker's slut. I buried my face in my hands and cried.
Decisions. Chapter 114. I lay on the bunk bed in my prison cell, reading the newspaper. I was still in the newspapers, but now that my trial was over, I was no longer front page news. I'd been relegated to the third or fourth pages, and they were no more accurate than the front page. I was only reading it to pass the time. After all, I had nothing better to do. One article did catch my attention, though. Suspected mole within the Liberation Militia. Sources from within the Liberation Militia stated that the whole movement is in turmoil over a suspected mole who, it is believed, is actually working for the government. The mole is rumoured to be someone high up in the party echelons. Our sources have revealed that all LM activity has been suspended until the mole is found. The editor says, see page 7. Well done, Jude, I thought. That's if it was Jude. If he wasn't dead yet. There was no way to get to the General, so a few rumours in the right places, a couple of discreet interviews, and the General would become aware of our suspicions. I could only hope that the General would catch Andrew Dawn before he had a chance to cover his tracks or disappear. I scrunched up the newspaper and dropped it in the bin beside my narrow bed. What was the point of reading the news? No point at all. My thoughts turned to my sister, Lynette. Funny, but I thought of her more and more often these days. She'd always been there for me. She made our home bearable. Each time I thought I couldn't take it anymore, she'd smile or put her hand over mine and I'd calm down inside. When she died, part of me had despised her for being a coward. Part of me had hated her for leaving me. It had been all about me. Now I thought about all the things Linny had been through. I'd allowed all the things that had happened to me to rob me of my humanity. Do unto others before they did unto you. That had been my philosophy. That's how I'd coped with the world. Linny's solution was better. Just fade out until you were ready to fade back in. Only she hadn't been ready. Maybe that's why she'd died. She'd pulled out of her unreal world too soon. Cal, you have a visitor, Jack told me. A visitor? Jack nodded, his expression somber. Jack was a cross prison guard, but in the short length of time I'd been at Humet prison, we'd become friends. I'd even say good friends. Something I'm sure was against the rules, but if Jack didn't mind, why should I? I looked at him now. Judging from his expression, this visitor was obviously someone I wouldn't particularly welcome. I had no idea who it could be. I hadn't been allowed any visitors at all since I'd been brought to Humet prison, so I was curious, to say the least. Man or woman? I asked. Man. And I take it I have to see him. Jack nodded again. Okay, I said, picking up my T-shirt. I'll just put on, don't bother. You're not going to the visitor's hall. He's coming to see you.
Here?
Yep. I put my T-shirt back on anyway. The prison cells were like ovens during the day, and although we were meant to keep our clothes on, most of the guards turned a blind eye if we took off our shirts. I'd taken mine off when it started to stick to my sweaty body like cling film. Heels clicked along the corridor. A man's heavy, determined footfall. And angry, too, by the sound of it. I stood up and waited. Then the man appeared before my cell bars. My mouth fell open. Kamal Hadley. He was the very last person I'd been expecting. He entered my cell. Jack stood outside. Kamal wore a dark charcoal grey suit and a royal blue shirt with matching tie. His black shoes were so highly polished I could see the light strip above reflected in them. You can leave us now, Kamal ordered, his eyes never leaving my face. But, Jack began. Kamal turned to him with a look that brooked no disagreement. Jack set off down the corridor. I considered knocking out Kamal and taking off down the corridor, but how far would I get? I considered knocking out Kamal just for the hell of it. It was definitely tempting. I'm sure you can guess why I'm here, said Kamal. I couldn't, actually, so I kept my mouth shut. I'm here to offer you a deal, Kamal went on.
What kind of a deal?
If you do as I say, I'll make sure you don't hang. You'll be sentenced to life imprisonment, and I'll make sure you serve no more than 8 to 10 years. You'll come out of prison still a young man, with your whole life ahead of you. I studied Kamal as he spoke. He hated being here. He despised having to ask me for anything. And he was having trouble hiding just how much he loathed it. It made me smile inside. I had something he wanted very, very badly, but I had no idea what. And what exactly do I have to do for this largesse? I want you to state publicly that you kidnapped and raped my daughter. I want you to freely admit to the crimes you're charged with. No more denials. Why? At first, I thought Kamar wasn't going to answer. I waited. I had all the time in the world. I wasn't going anywhere. My daughter won't be able to put this whole business behind her and get on with her life if you don't, he said at last. She feels she owes you something because you saved her life in the woods. If she knew you weren't going to die, then she'd be only too willing to get rid of your child. A child she never wanted. A child she still doesn't. Every word he spoke was well rehearsed and deliberately wielded to cause the maximum amount of pain. And it worked too. I half sat, half collapsed down onto my bed looking up at him. My guts were being shredded and he knew it. And she told you this, did she? Of course. I didn't believe him. I almost didn't believe him. He was lying. But suppose he wasn't. My life or my child's? Was that really the only reason? Seffi was still carrying it because of misplaced guilt over me. I didn't want to believe it. I didn't know what to believe. My life or my child's? Is it just the thought of Seffi and I having a child together that you can't stand? Or is it all mixed-race children in general, I asked. We're not here to discuss my feelings, Kamar waved aside my words like he was swatting flies. What's your answer? My life. Or my babies. Oh, Seffi. What should I do? What would you do? I need to think about it. I want your answer here and now, Kamar demanded. I stood up slowly. Well, he prompted impatiently. Time to choose. A choice to live with or die with. I looked Kamar Hadley straight in the eye and told him my decision. I knew it would damn me to hell. But I knew it was the right one.
Chapter 115. Dad barged into my room without even knocking on the door first. It was very late, almost midnight, but I wasn't the least bit sleepy. I couldn't even remember the last time I'd had a good night's sleep. I sat at my table writing in my diary when Dad came in. I shut the book and swiveled round in my chair. Dad stopped in the middle of the room. We regarded each other. We hadn't exchanged a word since he'd slapped me. Dad sat down on the corner of my bed, suddenly looking very weary. I'm not going to beat about the bush, Persephone, he told me. Callum McGregor is going to hang for what he did to you. I swallowed hard, but still didn't speak. And you're the only one who can stop it, Dad continued. Every cell in my body was put on full alert at Dad's words. I sat very still and watchful, waiting for him to carry on. It's within my power to ensure that he doesn't hang. I'll make sure he only goes to prison. He'll get a long sentence, but at least he'll be alive. And where there's life, there's a price. I kept my mouth shut, waiting for the other shoe to drop. And all you have to do is agree to have an abortion, said Dad. Like all I had to do was agree to eat my greens or go to bed early. That's what he made it sound like. Why? I whispered. Why? The incredulous word exploded from Dad's mouth. Because you're too young to have a child. Because it was a child forced on you. I've already told you, Callum didn't... You didn't set out to get pregnant either, did you? Dad interrupted harshly. It's too late to get rid of it. I'm too far gone, I pointed out. There are ways. Drugs to take care of that. Dad pointed to my stomach. Then they'd induce labour. It'd be relatively painless for you. And lethal for my child. If I say no, what will you do then? I asked. Kidnap me like the noughts and force me to get rid of my baby? Dad stared at me. I know we're not close, Persephone, and I know that's my fault, but I would never, ever do a thing like that. His voice held such incredible hurt that it got to me, in spite of myself. But what you're doing is no different, I cried. You may not be using direct force, but you're pressuring me into having an abortion. It's the same difference. Callum's life or my child's. You're trying to coerce me into making a decision. Your decision. That boy's life is entirely in your hands. Dad stood up. It's up to you. I know you'll make the right choice. And with that, he left my room. I locked my diary and put it in its hiding place, moving around my bedroom on autopilot. I wanted my brain to shut down so I wouldn't have to think, so I wouldn't have to decide. But it didn't work that way. If I had an abortion, I'd be saving Callum's life. He wouldn't spend the rest of his life in jail either. I'd work every hour of every day for the rest of my life if I had to make sure that he was released from prison. And if he came out, when he came out, we could be together again. We could have more children. It was the chance of some kind of future together against no future at all. But if we were together, would we be able to live with the fact that our first child died for us? Or would the ghost of our child eventually drive us apart? Callum's life or our babies? That was the choice. Oh, Callum, what should I do? What would you do? And then just like that, there was no choice. I had my answer. I knew what I was going to tell my dad. God help me. I knew.
Losing My Religion. Chapter 116. Jack, your mind isn't on this game, is it? Jack throws down his cards. I don't want to play any more. I thought I was the one who was meant to be temperamental and moody, not you, I said dryly. Sorry. I gather up the cards. Poor Jack. This is almost as bad for him. Almost. Bless him. He's the one who's kept me up to date with what was going on in the outside world. He's the one who told me that since my farce of a trial, Sethi has spoken out publicly against the guilty verdict and has openly declared that I didn't rape her. She's told anyone prepared to listen that the authorities refused to let her testify on my behalf. And apparently, even some of the national papers are beginning to question the death penalty being given in my case. I'm hoping that Kamal Hadley doesn't emerge from this one smelling of roses the way he always does. A prominent psychiatrist stated in one of their so-called quality papers that Sethi was suffering from kidnapper empathy syndrome. Some psycho-babble about the captive taking on the ideals and beliefs of the captor to the extent that he or she begins to empathise with them. In Sethi's case, that's just so much nonsense. If I could have spoken to Sethi, I would have told her not to say anything on my behalf. Once I'd been found guilty, nothing on earth could have made the judges overturn the verdict. The reason is simple. I'm a naught who dared to fall in love with a cross. And worse still, I actually made love with her. And even worse than that, she's pregnant with my child and doesn't care who knows it. Poor Sethi. She never could tell when she was fighting a losing battle. I knew I was going to hang before the jurors were even sworn in. And now I've come to my last day on this earth. And I don't want to die. What time is it, Jack? 10 to 6. 10 more minutes, then. I shuffled the cards. Time for a quick game of rummy? Callum. I throw down the cards. It must be catching. I don't feel like playing myself now. Silent moments tick by. I don't want to spend my last 10 minutes in silence. Do you ever wonder what it would be like if our positions were reversed, I ask? At Jack's puzzled look, I continue. If we whites were in charge instead of you crosses? Can't say it's ever crossed my mind, Jack shrugs. I used to think about it a lot, I sigh. Dreams of living in a world with no more discrimination, no more prejudice. A fair police force. An equal justice system. Equality of education. Equality of life. A level playing field. Good grief. Is that a thesis or a fairy tale? Jack asks dryly. Like I said, I used to think about it a lot. I'm not sure I share your faith in a society ruled by noughts, Jack tells me thoughtfully. People are people. We'd always find a way to mess up. Doesn't matter who's in charge. You think so? Jack shrugs. You don't believe that things get better? That they have to one day, someday? When? It takes a long time. But they do? Asks Jack. They do. But not for me. A long silence fills the gap between us. Until at last, I open my mouth to speak, but Jack gets in first. Your girl, Persephone Adley, tried to get in here to see you. And more than once as well, Jack tells me softly. But orders came from way above the governor's head that you were to have no visitors whatsoever under any circumstances. I digest this piece of news with regret. Kamal Hadley's influence, no doubt. Jack, can I ask you for a favour? Just name it. It might get you into trouble. My dull life could do with a bit of sprucing up, Jack grins. I smile gratefully. Could you find a way to deliver this letter to Seffi? Persephone Hadley? That's right. Sure thing. Jack takes the envelope from me. I hold his wrist. You have to personally put it into her hand. Promise? I promise, Jack replies. I let him go and watch him put the letter into his pocket. Sighing, I sit back on my bed, my back against the cool wall. There's still so many things I want to do, so many things I want to find out. I would have loved to see my mum again, just once more, just to say sorry. But it hasn't been allowed. Heaven only knows what she's going through now. Her husband is dead. Suicide or murder, take your pick. Her daughter is dead. An accident. Her youngest son is going to die because of his own self-inflicted stupidity. And her eldest son is missing? Wanted dead or alive. Poor mum. What has she ever done to deserve all this? My thoughts are flitting around now. I wonder about Jude. I miss him so much. I'd love to know if he's okay. Is he safe or in prison? Has he linked up with Morgan? Has he come up with a way to deal directly with that traitor Andrew Dawn? A newspaper article is all very well, but how can he be sure Dawn won't weasel his way out or just disappear? Dawn doesn't deserve to disappear after everything he's done. Will Jude catch up with him? I'll never know. And Seffi, how does she feel about me now? Is she still going to have our child? I'm sure her mum and dad are doing their best and then some to make her get rid of it. Maybe she already has. Our time together in the Rose Garden was so brief. All those things I'd wanted to say to her, and now they'll never be said. If I could just see her one more time, then I could make sense of all this. I'm sure I could. I hear the security door click at the end of the corridor. Jack jumps to his feet and heads out into the corridor to stand by my open cell door. This is it, then. I stand up and pull down my T-shirt. I can feel little prickles of heat break out all over my skin. I don't want to die. Governor Giustini stops in the corridor outside my cell. He looks at the cards scattered on the floor in the bed and then at me. Do you have a last request? Governor Giustini asks somebody. Just get it over with. My voice trembles over the last couple of words. I'm going to break down. Oh, please, God, if you're up there somewhere, don't let me break down. No more words. I can't risk it. Don't show him how terrified you are, Callum. Don't show them how you want to clutch at them and beg them not to kill you. Don't show them. Put your hands behind your back, Callum, Jack says quietly. I look at him. Strange. His eyes are shimmering. I try to comfort him. No words. Just the briefest of smiles in gratitude for his pity. Before I turn around, my hands behind my back as I wait to be handcuffed. Do you want a priest or some kind of spiritual counselling? Giustini asks. I shake my head. I never really believed in it when I was alive, so it would be hypocritical to call for it now. When I was alive. I'm not dead yet. Not yet. Every second counts. There's still time. I must have hope. Hope. Till the very end. Miracles have happened before. My cell door opens wider. Giustini leads the way, with two guards I've never seen before on either side of him. Jack walks next to me. You're doing fine, Cal, Jack whispers. Be strong. Not long now. They lead me down the long corridor. I've never been this way before. Early evening sunlight streams in through the high windows and dances across the floor all around me. It's so bright, I can see the dust mote swirling through the air. Who would have thought the dust could look so eerily beautiful? I try to walk as slowly as possible, to drink in every sight and sound. To make each moment last a lifetime. Good luck, Callum. Spit in their eye, Cal. Bye, Cal. Anonymous calls from the cells on one side of the corridor. I'm tempted to turn and study the faces behind the words, but that would take too much time. And that's the one thing I don't have any more. I look straight ahead. The door opens at the end of the corridor. More blazing sunshine. Such a perfect day. We step out. I stop abruptly. Faces. A sea of faces. Even more than when my father was about to be hanged. Lots of crosses come to watch the show. But the sun is before me and dazzling my eyes. I can't see much. Besides, the scaffolding is in the way. And the noose up there, gently swaying in the evening breeze. Don't look at it. I want to cry. Please, God, don't let me cry. Please, God, don't let me die. Giustini and his guards move to one side of the scaffold. Jack leads me to the stairs. I climb up them. He follows. Forgive me, Callum, Jack whispers. I turn my head. Don't be silly, Jack. You haven't done anything. Neither of you, says Jack. I pause to smile at him. Thanks for that. We're at the top of the scaffold now. The noose is less than a meter away.
and beneath it a closed trap door. I turned to look at the governor. He's standing beside another man, a naught with blonde hair wearing a black suit. The naught stands behind a long lever, the lever for the trap door. My life in your hands. I don't want to die. There's still time, still hope. I look around, scanning the crowd, searching the audience for her. But I can't see her. If I could just see her one last time. Where is she? Is she even here? Seffi? My child that I'll never see, never hold, never know. Is she here? Please, God. I've got to put your hood on now, Jack says softly. I don't want it on. How will I find her with a hood on? I'm afraid you have no choice. Those are the rules, Jack apologizes. He pulls the hood over my head. I try to pull back. I'm not trying to run away. I just want to see her one last time. The hood is over my head and hangs down at my shoulders. The world is black as night. Jack pulls my arm to lead me to the rope. Please, God, I don't want to die. Seffi! Tears run down my face. Now I'm grateful for the hood. I love you, Callum! Wait! I love you, Callum! And our child will love you too! I love you, Callum! I'll always love you! The noose is being pulled down over my head and round my neck, but I can hear her! I can hear her! She's here! I love you, Callum! Thank you, God! Thank you! I love you too, Seffi! Can she hear me? I love you, Seffi! I love you, Seffi! Wait! Please wait! Just a moment longer! I love you, Callum! Seffi!
Chapter 117. The trap door opens. I love you, Callum! I scream frantically. He drops like a stone. My words die on my lips. There's no sound, except the rope creaking and groaning as Callum's body swings slowly to and fro. Did he hear me? I don't know. He must have heard me. Did he say, I love you too? Maybe I just imagined it. I can't be certain. I don't know. Dear God, please let him have heard me. Please, please, if you're up there, somewhere. Birth announcements. At midnight, on 14th of May, at Mercy Community Hospital, to Persephone Hadley and Callum McGregor, deceased. A beautiful daughter, Callie Rose. Persephone wishes it to be known that her daughter Callie Rose will be taking her father's name of McGregor.
Noughts and Crosses by Mallory Blackman was read by Cyan Blake and Paul Checker and is published by BBC Audiobooks.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.